All right, good morning, everyone. As Pastor Tom was saying, this will be our last time together for this topic. It has been a really good discussion, I think, and I really appreciate for those that have shared their personal experiences. So today, I thought it would be a little bit different. It's, again, still going to be a lecture style, but I would like to kind of walk through a story of Joseph and kind of tying everything that we've learned together through the story. And so from wounded to witness, and I kind of want to just say ditto to Pastor Tom's sermon this morning and then just kind of end it. I really thought that what he was, the lesson and the sermon this morning really aligned with what we're going to be talking about today. And so God does not waste our wounds. Through the life of Joseph, we see how God walks with us in trauma, shaping us through suffering, and uses our healing to bring life to others. And as we're talking about this morning, you know, the illustration of the seeds in our heart, I thought that was pretty profound, being that trauma is like the seeds being sowed into our hearts. And eventually it grows, the seeds of trauma grows and chokes out the produce or the crop that was originally there. And I thought that was a pretty profound metaphor of the idea of how we could implement trauma as seeds being sown through, whether that's the a person, a loved one who's betrayed us, whether that's an institution, whether that's an event or situation. And so it chokes out the produce or the crop of our heart. And then the idea of a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset, and we'll be talking about that today. I just wanted to add, I would say the fixed mindset could also be a victim mindset. A victim mindset being that we don't move. We are stuck. And we don't move towards that growth mindset. So couple thoughts as we move forward today. I am not going to read all of the story of Joseph, but if you'd like to follow along, we're going to be in Genesis 37. And I just summarized the story, and I'm just going to read it. Joseph was the beloved son of Jacob, deeply favored and gifted with dreams from God. As a teenager, he dreamed that one day he would rise to a position of honor. But instead of celebrating, his brothers were consumed by jealousy. They betrayed him, throwing him into a pit and selling him into slavery. Wounded by the people who should have been protecting him, Joseph was taken to Egypt, far from home and everything familiar. In Egypt, Joseph served faithfully in the house of Potiphar, but just as things seemed stable, he was falsely accused of a crime he didn't commit. Once again, he was stripped of dignity and thrown into prison. He spent years in darkness, forgotten, invisible, and alone. But God was with Joseph, even in prison. Joseph remained faithful. He began using his gifts to interpret dreams and helping others. His character deepened, his humility grew, and in time, Joseph was called to interpret Pharaoh's troubling dreams. Through that act, God raised him up. Joseph went from prisoner to ruler, second in command of all of Egypt. When famine struck the land, Joseph's brothers came to Egypt seeking food, unaware that the brother they had betrayed was now in power. He could have taken revenge, but instead he wept. He chose forgiveness over vengeance, healing over hatred. He revealed himself to his brothers and said words that have echoed through generations. You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive. And so Joseph's story is a journey through deep trauma and traumatic wounds, betrayed by his family, stripped of his identity, and left without safety or control. Yet even in his suffering, God remained with him. Over time, Joseph rebuilt his trust and discovered a new sense of purpose. And experienced redemption, not only for himself, but for others. In the end, he chose forgiveness over revenge, showing us that our deepest wounds, when surrendered to God, can become the very place where healing and hope are born. So that's my encouragement for each and one of you this morning, is we have experienced deep traumatic wounds. And through surrendering to the Lord and asking and providing forgiveness, even though they might not deserve it, is where healing and hope are born. And so, again, we're just going to today, you know, in today's lesson, we're just going to be applying the concepts that we have discussed, starting with creation. If you remember, our cycle, creation, the fall, the curse, and redemption, and we're going to start there. So creation and shalom. If you remember, creation was the intricate, the perfect relationships between human relationships and with God and with creation. So now Jacob, Israel, loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. And he had made an ornate robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. We're talking about words this morning. So from a biblical perspective, at the beginning of Joseph's story, he had found that he had a deep knowing, and he was deeply loved, and he was set apart. And so Jacob treasured him, clothed him with a special robe that symbolized favor and belonging. And if you remember, I believe it was our second lesson, we talked about shame and how shame was introduced into the Garden of Eden, and how God sacrificed the animal, and clothed them with a different type of the animal skins versus the fig leaves. And so then Joseph has these dreams, visions from God that affirmed a sense of calling and purpose. So there's a sense of order, wholeness, and relational connection. This is the beginning that reflects creation, the creation narrative in Genesis 1 to 2. So our identity is rooted in God's image. Relationships are whole and safe. Life has purpose, peace, and trust. And Joseph's world for a time mirrors that state of shalom we've been discussing. From a clinical perspective, this is what counselors or clinicians would call the pre-trauma self. That's where it's the developmental phase where you're emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually intact. And so you have a safety in relationships, you have clarity of identity, and your confidence in your self-worth, and then our nervous system is already regulated. So the fight, flight, freeze, or fawn is not active or activated. And so Joseph knows who he is, where he belongs, and what his future might look like. And so, again, kind of as clinicians, we try to reconnect the individual who has experienced trauma with that part of themselves, that pre-trauma self, because it existed before the trauma, obviously, and then not to dwell in the past, but to remember that they were once whole, and that original self is not lost, it's just buried beneath that trauma, waiting to be drawn out and healed. And so from a Reformed perspective, Joseph's early life reveals the created order and covenantal identity given by God. And then before the fall, humanity was created in his image. And this is the beginning of humanity's original design for relationships, purpose, and trust in God's sovereignty. And so Joseph's story opens in a place of favor and relational wholeness. As this father's beloved son, clothed with a special robe, Joseph enjoys a sense of identity, belonging, and purpose. This mirrors, again, the creation narrative. And then from a clinical perspective, this represents secure attachment. There's trust, there's safety, there's identity. And then from a Reformed perspective, Joseph's identity is not merely in his role of family, but ultimately in God's sovereign choice and covenantal purposes. It reminds us that our truest identity is received. that it's received, not achieved. And so just a couple reflection questions. When in your life have you felt most grounded in your God-given identity and secure in your relationships? Comments or questions? John.
For me, I think the most important thing to remember is that we have choice. We may not have chosen our past or our trauma, but we have the choice of what we do with it and how we move forward. And too many times when you're traumatized, you feel stuck, you feel like, oh my gosh, blah, 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 this is who I am. That's not true. We can choose differently.
Yeah, going back to that fixed or victim mindset, right? We now want to take on that new role of the growth mindset. Yes, well said.
As a clinician, how do you help somebody who, say, from very early childhood didn't have, like, what experienced trauma, so they didn't have that the grounded relationship that you talked about initially?
Just to clarify, make sure I'm understanding the question, you're saying if a person has never felt that secure attachment, has always been in like a dysfunctional family, how do I teach them? It's a long process and it's a lot of time. But again, I think it really depends on the individual. I think if they're motivated to want to change, then constantly encouraging safe relationships, community. And then in the therapy, you know, office, we're talking about skills, communication, boundaries, forgiveness, working through that trauma, coping skills, regulating the nervous system.
As a friend of someone who had that experience, how do I?
So the question was, as a friend of someone who's been through trauma, how do you help them? And again, it's just, you already are. If they're coming to you and you're following up with them, you're creating that secure attachment, whether you know that or not. It's whether you're intentional or not, that role modeling of the safety and trust and respect and the boundaries, you're doing the work that is needed. So keep doing it. Yeah. Sue.
When I did rape crisis counseling in Harrisburg, I think the worst thing was for people to realize what they felt, someone else has already felt the same thing. It's a normal reaction. And if that helps your recovery too, because you think you're the only one in the world that feels crappy about themselves after being raped or whatever. And when you realize that, you know, everyone that's been raped feels that way, and it helps them get over it a lot.
Yes, well said, Sue. When someone experiences a trauma like, you know, sexual assault or rape, it does feel like you're the only one that's ever experienced that, and I think that's what the enemy wants, is to isolate you from others and to thinking and to believing that you're worthless or that you're no good or that, you know, you're unlovable, and that's just a lie. It's a lie from the pit of hell. Good comments, good questions. Just moving on for time's sake. Part two, the fall, the betrayal, the pit, and the loss of safety. They saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, the brothers, they conspired against him to kill him. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, and they took him and threw him into the pit. This is the moment Joseph's life is violently disrupted. His own brothers, motivated by jealousy and hatred, stripped him from his robe. The robe is a metaphor for his identity and dignity, and they throw him into a pit. He cries out, but they do not listen. This parallels Genesis 3, where the fall is introduced, and it introduces fear, shame, betrayal, and broken relationships. So Joseph's trauma begins not from random sufferings, but through relational sin for those that he's trusted and that should have protected him. And I'm sure if we went around the room, we could also discuss some of our own relational traumas that we've experienced that we felt like that person should have, we should have trusted them, or they should have protected us, but they betrayed us. And so from a clinical perspective, Joseph's experience is a profound loss of safety and relational betrayal, two of the most impactful factors in trauma. And so going back, we can see our trauma responses are the fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And so going through this, he pleads with his brothers as he's trying to fight his way out. And then the flight is he is physically restrained and sold and thrown into a pit. So maybe flight is not an option in this case. The freeze, he's maybe powerless in the pit, likely overwhelmed and immobilized. The fawning is later seen in his behavior of quiet service in Potiphar's house, in prison, possibly appeasing or adapting to maintain survival. And again, if we recall, these reactions are not necessarily conscious. We don't necessarily think to do these things. They are innate. They are a reflex that God has created. And so these aren't, he's not sinning, but more so an instinctual survival response. But if over time, as we've talked about, if these things aren't changed, or these things, if we maintain in that fixed victim mindset, it starts to distort our view of ourself, others, and God. And so from a Reformed perspective, the fall in Genesis 3 is not only cosmic, it's personal. Joseph's story reflects how the effects of the fall are lived out in human relationships, especially in families. And so the betrayal is an expression of total depravity, which we talked about. And then God's providence is quietly at work. The pit and the betrayal are not random, and they are the beginning of a sovereign redemptive arc. And so if we would look at Acts 7, 9 through 10, Stephen talks about God was with him, even in this part of the story. And so just kind of breaking down the sovereign redemptive arc, sovereign is in control, redemption is restoration, and arc is our storyline. And so if we put it all together, God is in control, restoring our story. Trauma from this view is both a result of human sin in a space where God's trust and sustaining presence can enter. So Joseph's fall into the pit marks the beginning of his trauma, betrayal by his family, loss of safety, and ruptured in trust. The story reflects how trauma can enter our lives through sin and broken relationships. Yet through our theology, we can understand that even here, God's providence is active, working through human evil to accomplish his good purposes in his time. Just a reflection question. Where have you seen God's quiet providence at work in your own painful experiences, even when it wasn't immediately clear? Comments or questions? Part 3, the curse. So the biblical theme, but while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So after already enduring betrayal and slavery, Joseph is falsely accused by Potiphar's wife and unjustly imprisoned. Despite his integrity and faithful service, things go from bad to worse. In prison, he is forgotten and alone for years, even after helping others. If you recall, he helped a few other prisoners. And then this extended sufferings reflects the ongoing curse of sin in the world, as the painful toil, broken systems, relational distrust, and deferred justice. Even when we do what is right, we may still feel suffering under the weight of sin's reach. And so from a clinical perspective, this illustrates the complex trauma a if you recall, the difference between a singular and reoccurring event. This, as Joseph so far has experienced, the mistrust from his brothers, the betrayal, that is one trauma. Being thrown into a pit is another trauma. Being sold into slavery is another trauma. So these are multiple layers occurring. And so this is a reoccurring complex trauma. Trauma-related symptoms Joseph may have experienced, and that modern survivors often do, the emotional numbing or detachment. If you recall, it's called dissociating. Hypervigilance or distrust, loss of motivation, internalized shame, disconnection from identity and calling, as we were talking about Sue's point. And Joseph's ability to serve and interpret dreams shows that he is still functioning outwardly, but likely bearing the internal weight that is invisible to those around him, much like trauma survivors feel, this internal weight, the shame, the guilt, the loss. Reformed theology acknowledges the real and persistent effects of the fall, not just morally, but systematically and relationally. And so this is a good example of common grace, God sustaining him, and mysterious providence, which is the idea that God is working behind the scenes even when we can't see it or make sense of it. And more importantly, God's presence in suffering is emphasized. But the Lord was with him. This doesn't mean relief is immediate, but affirms that God is near to the brokenhearted and that our trials are not wasted. And so from this view, Joseph's affliction is not accidental or meaningless. It is part of God's hidden, unfolding plan, preparing him for future fruitfulness. So Joseph's unjust suffering shows how trauma is often compounded by circumstances beyond our control. The ongoing impact of sin and brokenness doesn't always lift quickly, even when we remain faithful. Yet God's presence in the prison reminds us that he sustains us even in the silence, shaping us through waiting, refining, and hidden growth. And this is the work of sanctification. And a reflective question: how might God be using a current season of waiting or hardship to shape your character, even if you can't yet see the outcome? Comments or questions?
I think you hit a really important point back a few slides ago, where sometimes people try to do something and something bad happens and they instinctively blame themselves. And sometimes I've said to people, you can do everything right and everything goes wrong. And so sometimes what you're dealing with people is helping them to not have false guilt and false shame, where they really didn't do anything to deserve what they got, but they blame themselves.
Yeah, that's what we were certainly discussing in the first couple lessons, is the idea of false shame and how shame can take on our identity even though it's not ours to carry or to wear.
In looking at the story of Joseph, this goes far beyond what his brothers did. It goes back to his father. For one thing, Jacob shouldn't have been favoring one child over another. But when you look at Jacob's life from the womb, holding onto his brother so he could be born, try to be born first, then what he did with Leah and Rachel. So, I mean, Joseph was the one that got hit with all of these bad choices. Now, that doesn't mean his brothers aren't responsible for their actions. They are. And maybe if they had seen a good psychologist, they would have known the error of their ways. But it's not just a single event that happened. There's more, way more behind it.
Well said, Karen. Yes, couldn't agree more. This idea of generational trauma, or generational sin being passed down from generation to generation to generation. And I think some people feel that responsibility and feel that weight as they reflect their family history, and they want to be the ones to break the curse. And so I think it's important. I think that's why it's so important to recognize where we come from and the history of our family, to then be mindful of our actions and our family's actions. Yeah. Georgia. Oh, go ahead. Bethany and then Georgia.
This is one of the things that I have appreciated about the Reformed circles that I've walked in. I grew up in a different church setting, and while they would have said hard things happen, but you can respond in a godly way, it would have just been flat of like, just don't acknowledge that you were raped or the bad things, just respond in a godly way. And I have appreciated what I have seen in Reformed circles, that it's okay to call a sin a sin, and you're actually doing someone a gift by saying rape is wrong, or whatever the situation may be. I'm just using that because we said it earlier, but to say it's wrong and that's bad and I'm sorry that happened, but you can still move forward. Not hiding it under the carpet, but acknowledging it and moving forward to God's glory.
Yeah, I would agree that if we don't discuss it, we're only re-traumatizing the person who has experienced it. And so the sin of that and the curse is only being prolonged and increasing. Good point.
I love how you have used this story to bring hope, because it does. It just is, the sovereignty of God is something that we can rely on, and this is proof, and it is wonderful, and I appreciate that.
Thanks for the comment. Yeah, I agree that I think through shared stories it gives us hope, and I think that's really important as we continue to understand the importance of being able to support others is through our shared stories. Moving on, part four. But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive. So Joseph's story turns when he interprets Pharaoh's dreams and is promoted to second in command in Egypt. Could you imagine being in prison, feeling like you were nothing, and then you're promoted to second in command in Egypt? I couldn't imagine that. It's quite the transition. His earlier suffering is not erased, but given purpose as he saves nations from famine. Joseph chooses forgiveness. He restores relationships with his brothers, and instead of seeking revenge, he could easily, with the power that he had, the authority that was given to him, Pharaoh wouldn't have thought twice if Joseph would have sought revenge on his brothers. This reflects the biblical theme of redemption, God bringing good out of evil, restoring broken relationships, and healing wounds. And so from a clinical perspective, Joseph's journey models post-traumatic growth, right? This growth mindset, the positive psychological change experience because of adversity. And so that looks like reclaiming our identity and purpose, finding meaning in suffering, choosing forgiveness over bitterness, and rebuilding trust in relationships. Forgiveness here is not minimizing trauma, but liberating oneself from the ongoing burden of pain. Joseph's restoration of family bonds exemplifies the healing of relational wounds and recovery of safety. And so from a Reformed perspective, the redemption reveals God's sovereign providence, working through human sin and suffering, as we discussed earlier. His forgiveness echoes the gospel's call to forgive as we have been forgiven by Christ. Just want to pause and say that forgiveness of our perpetrators is not easy, and it is not a light switch. And so please hear me, I'm not saying that we need to forgive, but I think we need to look to forgive our perpetrators, as it is an ongoing process. This forgiveness, Joseph's story anticipates the ultimate Redeemer, Jesus Christ, who transforms suffering into salvation and offers healing for our deepest wounds. The redemption in Joseph's story is a type of foreshadowing of Christ's work on the cross. So Joseph's rise from prisoner to prince empowers how God redeems suffering and uses wounded people to accomplish his purposes. His choice to forgive and restore relationships illustrate the path from brokenness to wholeness and models the healing potential in trauma recovery. And so God's sovereignty is highlighted. His redemptive plan is unfolding through our human brokenness. And so how might your own story of suffering become a testimony that brings hope and healing to someone else? And the question is highlighting this victim mindset to growth mindset, being able to utilize, we may not be thankful for our trauma, but we can utilize it to help someone else. Thoughts or questions, comments?
I was just trying to figure out, it took me 60 years to really get my act together. I was depressed for 40 years and on medicine, and not until this girl came to my car in 2012 and knocked on the window and said God wanted her to tell me something, and it was, so I invited her in and she told me that God loved me, and I start crying and all this. Anyway, this girl, I never had a relationship with her. I asked her where she lived. She said around. So kind of think she was maybe an angel, but it doesn't matter. I got off medicine that I'd been on for 40 years. I was driven towards God. God had drawn me to him, and I've just been driven ever since, and he's cool. God is cool, and he healed me, and I'm not a victim.
Amen. You're no longer a victim, and you've written your stories, and you've written, you know, wrote the book and your poems, and you're passing it out, so awesome. Any other comments or questions?
I just wanted to share, it has been really helpful to me to have a consistent counselor in my life. And there are a lot of things that my parents chose to do that I really admire. But when I had brought up how helpful it was for me to them, and I recommended that they get my sister, who's 5 years younger than me, enrolled in counseling, they listened. And just the one time I was getting like lunch with her just one-on-one, and it had been like 2 years that she had been seeing the same lady for 2 years weekly, and she shared, she goes, so I started telling her the truth and it's been super helpful, and I'm like, what have you been doing? And just like, there are some people that were really good supports for me, but in our growing up she didn't see them as safe people. And so just like for her, it takes so much longer for her to feel comfortable and safe, and just like to be like open with talking about how my relationship is with my counselor really helped her to be like, okay, maybe I could actually trust this lady that I've been seeing weekly, and just like the amount of growth that that's been. So I just think that it's good to be open, and I was really glad that my parents listened because it's been really good for my sister to stay in it, even though it's like for the first 2 years they're like, I don't even think this is helping, but for some people it just takes that long.
Yeah, so many good things that can be taken from that, Caitlin. The, you know, just kudos to the counselor for being patient and being that safe place, you know, for her. And then also, I think that just demonstrates the family redemption, you know. Just because one person is getting help, I mean, it also emulates and helps the whole family. So really cool. Thanks for for sharing that. All right. Part five, becoming a witness, using our wounds to minister to others. 2 Corinthians, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which ourselves are comforted by God. And so Joseph's life teaches us that God doesn't waste our pain. The comfort and wisdom we gain through suffering becomes tools to minister to others in our brokenness. Just want to pause and go back to the first point, that God doesn't waste our pain. It's kind of interesting that, you know, Jesus himself bears the scars on the cross, that he could have easily healed those wounds, but he didn't. And that's kind of interesting to think about, as it's a physical reminder. And maybe some of you have your own scars, physical or emotional, but it's a reminder in how we can use our suffering to help others. And so Joseph's leadership during the famine not only saved nations, but also restored his family. And this reflects the Christian call to share in one another's burdens and offer hope drawn from our own healing journey. And so therapeutically, survivors who process trauma well often develop empathy, resilience, and a desire to help others, a phenomenon known as post-traumatic growth. And so we strengthen it, you know, by helping others, it strengthens your own recovery, fosters meaning and purpose, and builds community and connection. And so Joseph's story illustrates how wounds can become wells of healing and hope for others. And so from a Reformed perspective, God's comfort to us is not merely for our own sake, but for the building up of the body of Christ. And our own experiences of grace and suffering equip us to serve others with humility and compassion. This reflects the doctrine of common grace and the call to discipleship. And so Joseph's journey from wounded son to wise leader reveals that God uses our past pain for his greater purposes, even though we might not see it in that moment. Our healing becomes a ministry, allowing us to comfort others with the very grace that sustains us. This calls us to trust God's sovereignty and to become vessels of his comfort and hope in such a hurting and dark world. Before I get to the conclusion, any thoughts or comments with part five? All right. Oh, yeah.
I think it's important to... Well, let me put it this way. When you're teaching someone to drive, right? You say, okay, you see a pothole. If you stare at the pothole, you're going to hit it. You want to look where you want to go as opposed to where you don't want to go. And I think that's part of this whole process, is where you put your eyes, right? If you continue to look at the trauma and the trouble and the pain, you're going to stay there. The idea, for me personally, you can resign yourself to something, you can accept it, or you can embrace it. And I found for me, it was very helpful to embrace it because I wanted to see what God was doing, how he was going to build my character, and more importantly, build a testimony to himself. So if we look down the road, it helps us get past to where we are.
Yeah, well said. Thanks for sharing. Avoid the potholes in life and don't stare at them for too long. As we've seen, as we've walked through Joseph's story, trauma is real, painful, and disorienting. Betrayal, loss, injustice, and long seasons of waiting can break us. But the God of the Bible does not waste our wounds. He is the God of all comfort, walking with us in every pit, prison, valley. And so Joseph's story reminds us that our identity is rooted in God's covenantal love, not just our circumstances. Sin and brokenness disrupt God's shalom, they do not have the final word. God's providence is at work, even in the darkest moments, shaping us for his good purposes. Redemption is possible. Healing, restoration, and forgiveness can bring new life. And ultimately, our wounds become a source of ministry as we comfort and serve others through the grace that has been comforted us. And so, in our Reformed understanding, our lives are held in the sovereign hands of God, who redeems all things for his glory and our good. No pain is wasted, no tear unnoticed, no journey outside of his care. And so what does this mean for us today? We can surrender our trauma and difficult experiences to the God who heals and restores us. We can find hope in the promises of Scripture that God is near to the brokenhearted. We can trust that even in suffering, God is forming us into his image. And we can step forward in that growth mindset, even when we're wounded, but we're not defeated, to become witnesses of God's grace in a hurting world. And so my challenge and encouragement that your story matters, your pain, your healing, and your growth are part of God's greater story, a story that moves from woundedness to witness. And like Joseph, you may be walking through a dark pit right now, but God's plan is unfolding, and your faithfulness is not in vain. Hold on to hope, lean into God's comfort, and prepare to be a light to others who need it, that healing is possible. That concludes our trauma lessons. Adrian has put a few of my handouts on the app or website. But if you have additional questions or like the PowerPoint, you can email me, or my number is, I think my email and number is in the directory, so please feel free to reach out. Any final questions or comments about our time together?
Dylan, can you just tell us where on the website it is? As I've looked, I've not seen it, anything.
Mr. Tom?
Yes, I mean the app.
When I've looked on the app, I think the Sunday school lessons that I missed were under sermons, and then when you open it up, the attachments were there. It's been a few weeks, and it may have changed, but just keep hunting or text Adrian.
She's right. I think look under sermons.
What Beth Ann says, reminded me that does sound right. It should be under the sermon, like the in the app. You just have to look for it. Any other questions or comments?
I just love how you said from wounded to witness, because it, and having that sense of purpose in from the pain, and that just gives me incredible hope. So thank you.
My pleasure. Look under sermons under the app, on the app.
I just want to say thank you for your time and doing this.
Yeah, you're welcome, my pleasure. Toby, we have a question in the back, if you don't mind. Karen.
No, I just checked the app, and it's all there. Under the sermons, it's all there.
Perfect. Thank you. Any other final questions? All right. Pastor Tom, do you mind closing us?
Thank you, Father, for all of the truths that we have heard today, and that I can tell we heard in the previous lessons on this subject. You are the God who heals and redeems, and I pray we would never lose sight of that. Every story in this room is different, and I pray, Lord, that you would indeed bring the healing and the hope that only you can bring. And I do pray that you would help each one of us to minister to others in their pain, that our ministry might be a testimony to you. So thank you for Dylan and what he's taught us, May we continue to carry these lessons into our lives. I pray in Jesus' name.